Ann Taylor Pittman is the daughter of a Korean woman who married an American GI in 1967, a Mississippi farmer's son. They ended up raising their own family in Mississippi. And like a lot of children of newcomers to America, identities can be confusing, especially when you didn't look like anyone else in your school. Ann grew up Southern, not Korean. It wasn't until she was 43, a mother herself, and an editor at Cooking Light magazine, that she made a pilgrimage to Korea for a story she was writing about her mother's family. So, Ann, tell me, what was it like being Korean in the 70s in the South?
Being Korean in the South was a little lonely in the 70s. I wasn't quite sure who I was, what my identity was. I didn't know much about my mother's life. I didn't know what it meant to be Korean. I thought in my head that I looked like my friends, that I was not different from anyone, but I was reminded a lot that that I was different. And so, you know, the question that always came to me from kids, and you know, and these are not people who meant any ill or anything negative. This was the question I always got was, are you Chinese? And, you know, I would say no, and it usually dropped at that. And there was no real understanding that there was Asian beyond Chinese. And, you know, I'm not trying to say that everyone in the South felt that way, but certainly everyone I came in contact, contact with, that was sort of their frame of reference.
So how much Korean culture did you have in your house when you were growing up?
We had a little, and it was usually through food. I lived in small towns in the Mississippi Delta, and at that time, my mother could not get ingredients to cook Korean food. So we would go to Memphis about once a month and go to a small Asian market there. So my knowledge of Korea, or what it meant to be Korean, was through these dishes like bulgogi, which I loved. I always loved. It's thinly shaved meat that's marinated in soy sauce and sugar, and so it's sweet and salty, and you cook it over really high heat, so it's charred, and it's just delicious. And she would cook these noodle dishes, and I always loved those. They're using these, I always called them glass noodles, these cellophane noodles made from mung beans. Every now and then, our relatives in Korea would send these packages and these little Korean toys, and the one thing that I remember, mainly because we have photographs of them, were these fancy formal Korean clothes. It's called hanbok, and it was this very shiny, very colorful, vibrant, satiny outfits for my brother and me. And we would get dressed up in those every now and then and say, look, we're Korean. And that was sort of all we knew of being Korean. My mother just didn't share much. And I don't think it was that she was trying to shut us out or anything. It was just, for her, there was a lot of, pain that she left behind. And she had started a new life in the United States and didn't want to dwell on the past.
You write a little bit in the article about how she would cook some dishes, but there were a couple dishes that she would only make for herself.
Right. My father admits to sort of leading the charge against kimchi. he never liked it. As kids, my brother and I didn't. We were terrified of kimchi. It was so strange. The smell was so strong. We were just kind of terrified of it. I since have come to love it. But we wouldn't eat that. And so my mother missed the flavors of home, and she would make soups with tofu and kimchi. And she would eat them by herself. And when I think back on it now as an adult, I think how lonely that must have been for her to have this one sort of lifeline that keeps her connected to her culture, the one thing that she could do at home that we wouldn't participate in with her.
So you, in middle age, picked yourself up and made your first trip to Korea. You went from Seoul to Busan, right, which is where your mother was from?
That's right. I was kind of spurred on by a couple of things. One was this incident that happened. I make it sound so crazy. This incident at my kids' school. I was having lunch with my kids in their elementary school cafeteria, and a kid walked by the table on his way to put up his tray, and he looked over his shoulder, and I thought, oh, okay, he's about to say happy birthday to my kids or something because they're at the birthday table. I have twin boys, and I was there for their birthday. But he didn't say happy birthday. What he said was, "Hey, Chinese lady." And I was floored, and it was a really strange, I mean, it was like a scene in a movie. I felt like the camera just focused in on me and everything else blurred away, and that I was 7 years old again, and I was in a school cafeteria in Mississippi. It immediately took me back to that feeling. I came back to work, and I was talking about the power that that child had to put me in this place where I felt lonely and misunderstood and where I didn't understand myself. And, you know, I thought, wow, I need to really learn a little bit more about my identity, about who I am, about what it means to be half Korean. And the only way to do that is to go to Korea.
So tell me about the food scene in Korea.
Oh, my gosh. It's so fun. It's the food scene in Korea is very social. So a lot of restaurants are not set up to serve one or two people because it's a communal way of eating. A lot of the food is prepared on the table, at the table. So you order soup and they bring out this large communal bowl and the soup boils on the table, or there are grills for the bulgogi and you cook the food right there on the table. If you're not cooking the food on the table, you're at least all digging out of the same dishes. Sometimes you don't even have your own personal plate. You're just kind of chopsticking little bites off the same plates. It's very social. It's also incredibly intimate when you think about sharing a meal in that way. It's kind of powerful. I think it's a powerful way to connect to people. But it's also incredibly fun, very lively, lots of conversation and lots of drinking too.
So you started in Seoul. You wound up in Busan, which is your mother's town. Tell me about what that was like for you when you got there.
Busan was so different from Seoul. Seoul, I compared to Manhattan. It felt very modern. And Busan was a little gritty, less polished city. But the thing that that stood out as such a difference was that in Seoul, no one thought I was Korean. I look very Korean. My father is American, Caucasian, blonde hair, blue eyes. My mother is from Busan, South Korea. I look Korean. I don't look like my father at all. And I thought that in Seoul, people might think I was Korean, but no one did. No one thought I was Korean. I thought people might try to speak to me in Korean. No one did. But in Busan, a lot of people did. And I thought that was really kind of powerful. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is where my mother was from. You know, this is her area. And maybe there's a reflection of that in me. And there was just something very powerful that moved me there, mm-hmm. being there. So my brother and I needed to take a small little day trip to a little town called Hapchan, which was about an hour and a half bus ride from Busan. And this was where we were going to meet my mother's brother, so my uncle, and his wife. And we go to the bus terminal there in Busan, and we're trying to figure out how to buy our bus tickets. And this tiny woman approaches me. I mean, this tiny, tiny little woman. She starts talking to me rapidly in Korean. And I just sit there and think, oh, look, another Korean's talking to me and thinks that I'm Korean. I'm kind of sort of patting myself on the back. And, I say, I'm sorry, I don't understand. I walk away from her. And two steps into to my walking away, something echoes in my head. And I say to my brother, wait, did she just call me Anne? So he's like, I don't know. We turn around and she has a smile on her face. And I'll never forget this. It's a moment just sort of frozen. And I watch her smile sort of fade and her eyes sort of go unfocused. But we turn back and we walk back to her and her face lights up. And she looks at me and she says, Anne. She looks at my brother. She says, Tim. And then she says, in the most perfect English, I am Susie's sister. And so at this point, I think, oh my gosh, you know, this is the woman we had been told going into the trip that she was a little too frail to travel. She lives on an island off the mainland. We were told we wouldn't be able to see her. But here she's come to meet us at the bus terminal. And I was floored, overwhelmed. I was so excited and just kind of started laughing, choking, and hugging her very aggressively. and she was very happy. But then I think, you know, oh my gosh, what did she think when we turned away from her? What? I mean, did she think that she had failed, that she wasn't going to connect with us? And it was a very emotional moment. It was amazing. You know, I had never felt Korean before, although I call myself half Korean, and I am half Korean, and I look Korean.
With a Southern accent.
Right. With a very Southern. I'm also incredibly Southern. But I did feel finally like I was Korean.
What did your mom say about you making this trip?
I really wanted my mother to go on this trip, you know, so I decided I was going. My brother said he would meet me there. We asked our mother to go with us. I really thought it would be great. And she's so incredibly wonderful and wise. And what she said was no, she could not go on this trip because this was our discovery to make on our own. And that, yeah, that still kind of floors me.
Anne, thank you for this story.
Thank you so much.
Anne Taylor Pittman is executive editor of Cooking Light magazine. Her article was called Mississippi Chinese Lady Goes Home to Korea. She left us with an especially easy recipe for scallion pancakes with Korean dipping sauce. They are addictive. Find them. SplendidTable.org.